Next up with William Thomas, and we'll also be bringing in the co-owner of Ohio Airships in a moment as well. Airships on Coast to Coast AM. Well, it's starting, William, but not as fast as I'd like. Honda today announced that they've got this new car that will run on hydrogen, turning it into electricity. And then we're following a story of a car, very small, and it sells for like $12,000, that runs on compressed air.
Yes.
That's a great story.
Yes.
How'd you get interested in all in this field of propulsion?
Well, I'm a former pilot. I love flight and flying. I think it's one of our greatest achievements. But as a former pilot, I don't like the airliners quite so much. Not only are they very uncomfortable and we get sick flying in them, but given the atmospheric impacts of jet airliners, particularly in destroying the ozone layer and having huge increases in global warming because the pollutants from aircraft at high altitudes linger in the atmosphere and do far more damage. I've made a personal decision not to fly in the stratosphere, but I still want to get off the ground. So I started looking into airships some years ago, fascinated by the old Zeppelins that were flying in the 1920s and 30s, George, nonstop from Rio to Berlin, weekly scheduled service, like big cruise ships.
Sure.
In the sky. Beautiful, fine dining, walking around, private staterooms, windows are open, look at the whales, listen to the dogs barking over France.
How fast were they moving?
They're moving about 140 miles an hour, and as a former Cessna driver, I could say that will get the job done, and it will get you to your destination in about 4 days straight across the Atlantic, 3 days. And
now that was hydrogen. Hydrogen, though, wasn't it? Hydrogen, and of course we saw what happened to the Hindenburg.
Boom. That pretty well stopped airship development in 1937 when the Hindenburg blew up, landing at Lakehurst, New Jersey. A big problem with that story, that now mythical, legendary event, because of course it made the first radio broadcast, happened to be the Hindenburg explosion. Hydrogen was implicated, highly flammable. That was the end of airship development. But it was not hydrogen that brought down the Hindenburg. It was a butyl dope covering, experimental covering, applied to its skin on that flight, on that first flight, to shed rain, which was soaking up in the covering and robbing the ship of lift and profits, of course. So the German scientists, as well as putting that karmically questionable swastika on the tail, put this butyl dope covering, the same chemical components as rocket fuel, George, on this 900-foot-long ship, flew it through, you know, a thunderstorm, turned sharply over Lakehurst, maybe a cable broke inside, spark, and the covering ignited or backfired engine and burned bright orange, which is butyl dope. Hydrogen burns clear and burns straight up into the air. And in previous balloon accidents in the 1800s, the balloons actually descended safely with the hydrogen venting and burning above the balloon. So unfortunately, hydrogen was blamed. That was the end of airship development for quite a while. Now it's back. And helium will be the lifting gas of choice, at least until we run out of helium. And the United States has most of it.
How big are these airships? And we'll bring in Bob anytime you want.
Okay, great. The Zeppelins were in the 900-foot range, and the big ships being designed today by Ohio Airships, we're going to hear from a co-owner in just a moment, the Dynalifter, again, 1,300-foot-long ships, the size of an aircraft carrier, though a lot faster. Huge things. The pictures on my website, they look like the mothership floating over New York, floating past skyscrapers under construction. The smaller ones, George, the 21-passenger Zeppelins, actual Zeppelins, totally redesigned with brand-new technology, new skin coverings, fly-by-wire flight systems, vectored thrust tilting engines, the whole deal. The Zeppelin NT for new technologies are, as we speak, flying over Tokyo, flying over the Caribbean, flying over Africa.
Jeez.
China's just bought some. My mind was blown doing this research. These have been flying for years.
How many people are thinking that these are UFOs?
At night, you would be probably not to be blamed if you thought one of these was the mothership. Although the big one, the super big ones I mentioned are not yet in the air. We're talking 200 footers, not small, soundless, virtually soundless, slow flying or hovering. Gee, that rings a lot of bells, pushes a lot of buttons, doesn't it?
How about lights underneath?
Lights underneath. You've got lights underneath, you bet. And as I said, they're about to fly over London and I guess scare Londoners, although these are daylight operations, starting July 10th over London. And for all our good Americans out there, head on out to California and get on board Air Ventures Zeppelin NT flying over the Napa Valley wine country next September. That's very, very exciting. So basically flight scene, some diamond prospecting in Africa. Security is another use of these things. I found a company called Sky Cruiser Corporation, and they've been operating airships since 1980 in Japan, Korea, Australia, England.
How many people do they carry?
They carry about 21 people, including a two-person crew, some less and some the new one's 21 people.
So, I mean, so you wouldn't want to take it from L.A. to New York.
That's 18 hours at this point, and no, you wouldn't want to do that yet. But when the big ones come online, it wouldn't be a bad 18 hours because, again, private stateroom, fine dining in a restaurant. You could work if you're an executive, completely refreshed. And this is huge, George. No jet lag. No jet lag whatsoever. So you're ready to go to work on the other side. Meanwhile, you've got very comfortable ride in turbulence, quiet, calm, no banking or climbing like an airplane, safe and pretty steady in turbulence because they're so big. Fantastic.
Right. Well, why don't you introduce Bob Lewis Risk for us?
All right. This is a gentleman I had the pleasure of interviewing last week as part of my research into dynolifters. Dynolifters are something new here. This is very exciting, new technology for airships. So-called hybrid airships, the dynolifters use wings to produce 20 to 30% of their lift. He'll correct me if I'm wrong on this. The basic idea is these are heavier than air airships, and this eliminates one of the biggest problems with these giant balloons is how do you control them when they're on the ground?
Right. You gotta have
the wind wants to blow them into the trees, and they're just a handful. It takes hundreds of people to wrestle an old-style airship onto the ground. Well, these come in like an airplane, except they land in a very short distance, and you can turn the key off and walk away, and they'll stay put because they're heavier than air. So they need a little bit of propulsion to take off. The Dynolifter prototype is flying now, 120-footer, 200 horsepower to get off the ground. But once you're flying, you don't need that thrust to develop lift like an airliner. So you're back using 35 horsepower to cruise through the air. You can go halfway around the world in one of these things. They're extremely fuel efficient. And
are they safe? Well, let's find out. Let's bring him in.
Let's find out.
Bob Lewis, Risk. Hi, Bob.
Hello, George and Will. Thank you for having me.
So are these things safe, Bob?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I think they'll be probably the safest aircraft in the world because they're very forgiving. They land slow. They take off slow. But it takes a long time for the air to come out from underneath them. Something I'd like to say real quick, too, is that the Hindenburg kind of saved it for someone that was born in 1960 to be able to start to develop an airship. It was kind of a godsend for us to be able to do that, and it happens to be that I live here in Akron, where we get to see the Goodyear blimp flying around all the time.
That's right.
So it's kind of an easy situation. We consider the blimp, seeing the blimp, ordinary, but I hear when it travels around, there's people chasing it down and taking pictures of it all the time. because it's kind of unusual.
What's the material that this is made with, Bob?
Well, right now, the prototype that we're working on, it is a sailboat sail material, and a lot of the cabling and things in it are the new technology that they use on yachts and to hold the mainstays. So they're synthetic, and they're very, very, very strong.
So
and
a
very
bunch
light.
Of seagulls couldn't crash through.
No, in fact, we got a test that we found out that they'll bounce off very nicely, but and they'll still keep flying. So that's a good thing.
What happens if a ship like this hits turbulence? I mean, I was on a flight a couple weeks ago, and I mean, I was bouncing like crazy. What happens when a ship like this hits turbulence, or does it not go up high enough, or what?
Well, I don't know if you knew that the Goodyear blimps and the blimps and the airships at the time, they didn't have seatbelts. And there's a big reason for it is that you don't have that concentrated situation of a wing being attached directly to your seats. And so when those wings hit those turbulence, you feel it drastically.
Mm-hmm.
In an airship, it's so spread out. It's kind of like a rowboat and an aircraft carrier compared to an aircraft carrier where you don't feel the waves as much as you do in a rowboat.
You don't get seasick up there.
So you don't get you don't get seasick.
But I mean, if you hit a big, would you take it in a storm?
Well, that was one of the things that the Germans were real good about to tell the U.S. about when they built the Akron and the Macon is not to probe thunderstorms with them. It's not a good idea to take any aircraft. In fact, the FAA now will probably frown on that to try to probe a thunderstorm or a hurricane or things like that with an airship. What they'll basically tell you is that delay your flight, just like you have a delay on your jet.
So you would basically say, we're not flying right now until this storm is gone.
Yes, well, the airships, because of the slower speeds of the airships, we save a lot of fuel. And our main idea right now is to use these to move freight because people like to get someplace fast, but we're finding out that we may be able to get some places faster because we don't have to provide any layover.
Right.
If you're flown through Atlanta, you know what I'm talking about.
Where would you land in various spots around the country?
Well, we found out, and because we were trying to find out where we could land these, and when we found out there's a lot of places, there's a lot of underutilized airports in the world. There's three of them actually in Ohio. One's in Mansfield, one's in Columbus, and one's in Youngstown. They're very, very long, big runways, hardly ever used. They were abandoned by the Air Force.
There's one over in Illinois across the river from St. Louis that they hardly ever use. It's a brand new airport.
That's what we're finding. We're finding several up in Michigan, one up in Manitoba called Gimli. Was a huge airport up there.
But I mean, somebody from Detroit's not going to go up to Manitoba.
Well, it's possible because we may end up using the Arctic Circle route to go around the world on these aircraft. So, yeah, Manitoba and Detroit and Gimli airports, and then bring them down to Ohio, which we're pretty centrally located within 500 miles of every major city here.
You want to get it for a generally commercial, civilian aircraft travel?
Absolutely. We have smaller ones that can do even your private. You could learn how to fly an airplane very safely. They land very slow, so for even private licensing, it would be even you would be able to get a multi-engine license, which is kind of hard to find right now. But our main focus right now is getting larger aircraft to move freight.
I mean, if people started traveling in these, how much would it cost a person, let's say, to go from, let's say, L.A. to Vegas?
Oh, I think less than, probably less than 50 cents a pound.
Pound of the person or pound of what he's carrying?
Pound per person.
Heavier person has to pay more, huh?
That means a little. Yeah. Well, that means I'm in trouble.
There's an incentive there to lose weight.
But the kids will, kids and elderly. I think it'll be a more satisfying, relaxing ride for them. The business people, they want to go fast. They can be crowded in those small airplanes, no problem. But these aircraft will have theaters. They'll have restaurants. They'll have a deck in the back where you can actually look over and see the landscape go by.
Jeez. Now, what if you're coming into a headwind? I mean, is it going to take you forever to get back?
Very, very good question. When that was actually solved in the old Zeppelin times, if you travel across the ocean, you never. Will, you might be able to help me out on this because I think you're a sales. You sail sailboats.
Yeah, let me jump in here if I may. We had a fascinating conversation, as I mentioned, George, and I'm an ocean sailor, and coming back across the Pacific with long-range weather capability on board, we were able to track storms up to a week away, low-pressure systems, and at 6.5 knots, 7 knots boat speed, about 10 miles an hour, with days warning, position that boat so that we could catch and ride the low rather than getting it in our teeth and basically being forced to stop. Now, an airship at 140 knots or miles an hour, for that matter, again, with advanced satellite weather tracking, we'll be able to ride those pressure systems and get a boost in speed, and headwinds are not going to be a factor on the longer over-ocean routes, transcontinental routes. You'll be able to ride the pressure systems. The short haul might be more problematic.
What keeps this airship from going up higher and higher and higher? What keeps it at its certain height level?
Well, our Dynalifter, it has wings and has dynamic control. So helium is just riding along. It's nothing to do in a blimp. It's a gas bag. So you really have to regulate the gas because of it expanding and contracting. In the Dynalifter, it's an airplane that's assisted by helium. So when we start going higher, all we do is point the nose down and give it some gas with the engines, and we go back down. So it's heavier than air. It's kind of like it's an airplane that's assisted by helium. That means that because we're not using fuel to keep that aircraft in the air with jets, you know, powered all the time, that we can have a less cost in fuel and save the environment as well.
It's almost like putting it in zero gravity almost, huh?
Well, that's exactly what the helium does. It's very interesting you said that because helium on a Dynalifter is an anti-gravity device. You still have all that mass in there. You still have the weight. So when you come in and you land, it allows you to land very slowly. See, the jets, they need these long runways because of they're so heavy to stop.
Do you have one of these prototypes built yet, Bob?
Yes, we have one built. We're doing work on it now and reducing the weight. It's a process. It's not you just because we're not a Boeing, we're not a Lockheed Martin. We're doing this on our own.
Have you taken it up yet?
We haven't got it up, but we have high-speed taxi test and have rotated it. At that time, we decided to take off 500 pounds of weight, and so we've got that accomplished. So the big news is that we're going to now put it all back together and get it on an Akron-Fulton runway and do our final lift.
Okay, so I can't blame you for UFO reports.
Not yet.
What will the lighting look like underneath it?
The lighting, I guess it will look just about like any kind of aircraft because of FAA rules. There'll be some specific lights that will be flashing. It'll look more like an airplane flying over.
Okay, so it won't be like a triangular light underneath it or anything like that.
No, but
know where I'm headed. Huh?
No, we could do that if you want.
No, I don't think we should do this. Do you, William?
No, I don't think so. If I could jump back in here, one of the most fascinating aspects of our interview, Bob, I'd like to get you back in here, is the firefighting aspect. Bob was telling me that a full-size Dynalifter carries so much water and fire retardant, they could virtually put out these big fires that are plaguing
Florida.
That's
not a bad idea. And California, we get them all the time out here.
Well, that's exactly true, and what we found out is everybody says, well, you can't take an airship over a fire, and well, that's true. Well, they don't take airplanes over the fires directly. Okay?
Right,
when they're raging, there's a chimney effect. There's almost a 70-knot upwind that will tear the wings off any plane.
Oh, yeah, you bounce like crazy.
And so what they do is they go a quarter mile to a mile ahead of the fire and coat the trees. And what's happening, these aircraft are so fast, and so the dynamic lifting airplanes like a jet and C-130s, they're going so fast that the water goes right through the treetops into the ground, onto the ground.
Hey, Bob, hold on for a minute. I'm going to come back with you and William. We're going to talk for a little bit before we get into cell phones, William. So I'm going to hold Bob over for just a second. We'll be back in a moment. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. And our special guest, William Thomas, and we've got Bob Lewis-Rist with us. He's the co-owner of Ohio Airships. Bob, how long has the company been around?
We've been around since 1999, doing research and development, studying the idea, and also finding the markets that the aircraft could be used in.
How did the idea come about?
It was very simple. I was building an aircraft for my son, who's now graduated from Embry-Riddle down in Florida.
Sure.
And he wants an airship to do as a remote control airplane, and I ended up building one kind of like the Zeppelin NT you guys are talking about. Fine people, great people, and found out that it was a little too heavy because it was too small, so I ended up putting wings on it and it gave me some ideas. I already had the answer, and so I went to Brian Martin, who was my partner, and he says, well, there's been no changes in freight since containers in the 70s. So we started putting the ideas together.
Think we'll ever have flying cars with helium?
It'll be a big, big aircraft because helium displaces air, so you need a big aircraft to...
Yeah,
here.
Too big then for cars.
Yeah, unless we get thicker atmosphere.
Well, you seem to have a passion for this. How come?
I do. Well, I think it's a wonderful way to travel. I am real keen. You know, I wanted to travel out into space and check out Mars, for example, but I'm looking at the big 6-0, George. I don't think I'm going to quite get there, at least in my body, but I sure want to get back up in the air. Not on airliners, but on an airship. I just think this is a beautiful way to go. And I think, George, that airships have a real important role to play in the post-petroleum transition that we seem to be in now. Certainly the airlines are looking at this, and they're in huge difficulty. And while it's very important that we refocus locally, we're still going to need to move essential cargo. And you're talking to a man whose company calls themselves, you know, the roadless people. Because the beauty of an airship is you can go point to point without a big infrastructure, without building, say, a $30 billion road from the ocean to Johannesburg, without huge airports. You can go point to point, pick up cargo and people, and deliver them where needed. I mentioned disaster relief. I have a scenario, a fictional scenario I put on my website explaining how this might work with airships, so they have a lot of uses, and we in the airship community and people looking to invest are very keen in powering these machines without using carbon-based fuel. That'll be the next technological breakthrough.
That's exactly right. I think the Dynalifter will set itself up real good for that because it's the semi-buoyantness of it, the hybrid of it, allows us to if we lose sudden loss of ballast, like dropping water on a fire, like we were talking about before, it sets us up with, because it's semi-buoyant, it doesn't shoot to the moon like a blimp would.
Hmm.
The Goodyear blimp, when you get off of it, you got to have somebody get back on it. So there's a ballast problem. On the Dynalifter, since we're heavy and we land like a regular airplane, we're letting the helium make us lighter so we can take off. But if you have a sudden loss of ballast, like 50,000 gallons of water, they put 1,000 runs on a fire, then it doesn't destroy the aircraft like the blimps would. That's why it's a huge, huge breakthrough in quantum leap.
That's exciting. It really is. So what's the maximum amount of people you'll be able to carry?
Well, we did some studies for some folks in China because they were looking into using them as ferries just to move people. Since we can carry about 160 ton very safely and very very cushiony, because we have huge cargo bays over 90,000 cubic foot, we can pretty much carry about 500 to 600 people very comfortably, just walking around, sitting in the seats, going into a theater, just very comfortable. Those are the ferries, but then we have luxury systems where you know that you'd have lesser people, but. All in all, it would be a very, very nice ride.
I love it. Okay, thanks. How about a website, Bob?
It's dynalifter.com, and we're also on the Coast to Coast
Got the link
website.
There for you. Okay, very good. And we'll be back with you in a moment to talk about the cell phones, and then next hour we'll open up the phone lines. Are you going to go up in one of the first flights, William?
Oh, I'd like to. Unfortunately, the Napa Valley flight's booked, I think, almost a year in advance.
Really?
But the Canadians are coming online. There's a company out of Ontario 21st century airships, and they've got a bigger one under development, and it's taken them 30 months, George, 30 months to get it flight certified by Department of Transport. That's one of the bottlenecks here, because these things do not adhere to aircraft type requirements and regulations. But they're going to be flying in 2009, and maybe I'll get my flight then.
Is Richard Branson jumping into this at all on Virgin Airlines?
Well, he better, because I think burning corn ethanol while people are having trouble getting tortillas is probably not a good thing to do on an airliner. And in fact, to segue off that, I think the airlines are going to have to start looking at this. They are telling us, the head of American, for example, just a few weeks ago, saying, we can't survive if oil goes above $130 a barrel. And we all know where it is
now. And it's 140 now.
It is, and on its way up to, they're saying, 200 and the stratosphere beyond. So airlines, as we know them, are gone. Cheap fares, the head of British Airways has announced to the world, are over. And the airlines, I think, are going to have to start looking at airship technology to keep our cargo and passenger flight opportunities alive.
What if you built a plane that in the skin, between the wall and the skin, was lined with helium? Would that help it?
It would certainly provide some lift, absolutely. But you've got so much weight in the structure of the aircraft,
it's way too heavy.
Probably not worth doing.
A carbon
fiber plane. You're still burning fuel to move most of that weight and provide lift. And that's what airships give you. You can burn a little bit of fuel for propulsion because you don't need to burn it for lift.
Let's take the next 12 minutes or so before we go to calls next hour. Why and how did you get interested in the cell phone situation?
I wrote a book some years back called Scorched Earth, and looking at the impacts of military weaponry and development on the environment, and discovered at that time, over 10 years ago now, 15 years ago, in fact, that the electromagnetic aspects of military radars and radios, jammers, things like that, was very, very severe, and then went further into the civilian realm and discovered that electromagnetic pollution, and this is for anybody who wants to win a free beer and a bar bet, bet someone what is the biggest single source of pollution on the planet today, and the answer is electromagnetic radiation. Electrosmog, some 10 million times stronger than we have evolved as human beings under natural conditions in frequencies we've never encountered. I became fascinated with this. I've got A's in physiology in school, and I'm always fascinated by the human body, how it works. And of course, we are antennas. And our brains and every cell in our body whisper to each other.
Mm-hmm.
With electrochemical reactions that take place continuously, keep us alive, allow us to think, even hear and evaluate this conversation. And it doesn't take much to disrupt that conversation.
I know here in California, as of July 1st, hands-free in a car, which is a good thing. And, you know, you've got the little Bluetooth, but there's also a little apparatus. I just picked one up where you just put it on the visor of your car and you sync it up with your cell phone, and there you go. I mean, if your phone rings, you just hit the button, or you can do a voice activation to make a call. It's kind of interesting.
I would say very quickly that hands-free in a regular cell phone, now Bluetooth is very low power, but in a regular cell phone, hands-free is a disaster in a car. You're using up to 10 times more power than you are in a headset phone, in a regular cell phone, to transmit that information across a car. Meanwhile, according to the British researchers, the car structure itself is amplifying the cell phone, no matter how it's broadcasting, another 10 times. Cell phones in cars are really a bad deal. They're costing about $4 billion extra a year in claims for accidents, 600% increase in accidents, not because cell phones are a distraction. People do all kinds of distracting things in cars, but because cell phones severely impair the driver's memory and reaction times, so that you're driving as a teenager with the reflexes of a 70-year-old driver, but without the wisdom and experience. So these cell phones in cars can shut down the brain for up to a half an hour after completing a call. And here in British Columbia,
The Medical Association, Dr. Runbel, says it's comparable to the risk of crashing while driving dead drunk.
And
in the United States, drunk drivers with a blood alcohol level exceeding 0.08, technically drunk, are less impaired than someone on a cell phone, no matter whether it's handheld or hands-free.
Why do we get some studies that say that cell phones could cause cancer? Others say no. Is it depend on who's paying for the study? What's going on there?
Well, you've hit it right on the head. It does matter very much who's paying for the study. Now, Dr. George Carlo, of course, is one of the first to look at this $28 million cell phone study funded by Motorola in 1993 to exonerate cell phones. He found that the radio frequencies from cell phone caused genetic damage. They didn't like that. He was fired. His lab was shut down. Ross Ady worked with Motorola. 91 came to similar conclusions. Motorola got mad at him. So the studies that exonerate cell phones, first of all, do not have that scientific proof. When Washington Post went to the cell phone industry during the height of this controversy and said, show us one study that says cell phones cause no harm at all, the industry could not come up with that study. But we have 15,000 scientific studies over 40 years reporting health hazards with cell phones. At least 66 of these studies show that they increase the chance of brain tumors in human populations. So the evidence is in, and what really turned my head around for this conversation tonight is something called the Bioinitiative Report, and I exerted it on my website, a huge report put together by 26 medical public health experts cross-checking each other, looking at all of the evidence, all of the studies, pro, con, otherwise. And in August 2007 came out, and they said the evidence is in, it's overwhelming, even at typically very low power, cell phones and wireless technology cause severe biological disturbances in human cells. And our current guidelines are not protecting us because they are based only on the heating effects on the phone and not their biological effects, which is like saying that cigarettes won't hurt you if they don't burn you.
Now, we've gone to a texting world. Everybody's texting. It's amazing. As a matter of fact, I have to put my phone away when I'm having dinner with someone because everyone texts all the time.
Yes.
But is that safe?
It is not safe. It is absolutely not safe because you are still transmitting and transmitting RF and microwave energy. And in fact, the people addicted to text messaging have these phones on all the time. And in standby mode, a cell phone talks or shakes hands with the nearest cell phone relay tower. And these are really bad because, of course, that's a continuous low dose of microwave and RF radiation that we are, that's involuntary for everyone in range.
Well, if you're just next to your phone, not even using it, it's on the table or something, is that a problem?
It's a problem if it's on and, as I said,
and they're always on. They're all on.
Well, we want to keep them off, frankly. Distance does help. It goes to, the effects decrease with the square of distance. Maybe if you're standing, 5 feet away and you have the speaker aspect turned on, you won't be quite so zapped. But I'm very reluctant to say anything to do with cell phones is safe simply because it's a dose-response relationship in terms of effect, and the more we use them, the more these effects accumulate in our bodies.
Do you use one at all?
No, I got rid of mine years ago when I started doing the research. I literally got rid of it. I did the research and said, man, this thing is convenient, but how convenient is cancer? Not very. And we're finding today, and this came out of the Bioinitiative Report and all of the studies they reference, cancer is one of the bad deals. We're talking 4% of population now, it looks like, will definitely get a cancer, brain cancer, eye cancer, ear cancer from using a cell phone. That's, 80 million people?
Well, they say Johnny Cochran, the attorney, when he died, he had a tumor maybe caused by a cell phone. What about Kennedy? You know, he had this tumor.
Yes.
What do you think?
I think that there's no question that heavy users of cell phones are courting tumors. 2,000 hours on a cell phone or a cordless phone, underlying cordless phones, these can be even more power emitting than a cell phone to cover the distance. 2,000 hours, your chances of cancer, tumor, two times to four times higher than anyone else. So we are looking at what could become an actual cull of the population. Cancer is definitely frightening. 4% of the 2 billion users today, 500 million children using them who should have nothing to do. Underline, emphasize, shout, no cell phones for children through teenage years, period. Very bad business. You're talking, what, 8 million people coming down with cancer, millions a year. But that's not the big problem with cell phones. Bad enough and reason enough not to use them. It's called Alzheimer's. It's called dementia. It's called senility.
Yeah.
And the new studies are saying kids brought up with cell phones will be senile by the age 30. By the age 30, they will be senile. Up to 40% of people using cell phones by the time they're, in fact, most people by the time they're 40, if they've been using them for their lives, will be useless in society, useless, unable to do work because they won't be able to concentrate, and they will have various physical and emotional disorders. And this information I'm saying tonight over the air is all thoroughly documented on my website, in my work, and in the BioInitiative report. And I give the link on my website. People could spend 4 or 5 hours going through this, and this is all documented. I don't say things as hair-raising as the information I'm giving out tonight without being 100% certain of it. And these medical studies are cross-corroborated by top researchers all over the world, and we are looking at extreme brain impairment, particularly, again, children in school. They go out to recess, call home, call a friend. They go back. They're toast
Larry King,
rest of the afternoon in terms of learning.
Larry King did a show with some top neurosurgeons, and they all use cell phones.
Yes, fascinating. And they all said, oh, no worries. No worries, because we all use earpieces, and we keep the phone away from our bodies. Well, very good to keep the phone away from your bodies, especially your reproductive organs, especially your brain. Great. I was dismayed to hear them say that, though, George, and here's the reason why. Earphones are not a good deal. The wire acts as an antenna depending on its angle. This is fascinating. So you could be using an earpiece with a wire from your headphone and be sort of all right. I'll go that far.
Right.
But if the wire's at the wrong angle, you're not all right, and it becomes an antenna broadcasting these microwaves and RF into your body and into your tissues, and you can't tell what that angle is. You can't tell when it's safe or not. So we see a lot of, you know, people trying to come up with reasons to, you know, make them safe, and we've got magic crystals and quartz things and shields, and the answer is, if the shielding really worked, the phone wouldn't work.
What about some of these cordless phones that people have now in their houses?
More bad news, I'm afraid, because these are very high power. What, 5 gigahertz, 10 gigahertz? Now you can talk down the block with these things. And again, the base station is always on, the wireless base station, like the wireless routers we might be using with our computers. The phone company gave me a free wireless router. Wonderful. Great. Get rid of all these darn wires. Simplify my office. I kept it in the box. It's 10 gigahertz. I do not want that thing radiating through my living space.
Frightening.
It's, well, we have to take precautions, because with so many people using this, we have, major experts in the field, doctors and scientists with reputations, saying that we are looking at, they don't use the word cull, but they're saying fully half the developed world's population could suffer disabilities in the next 5 to 10 years.
That's astounding. Up next, William Thomas and your phone calls. We'll talk about chemtrails, cell phones, and these airships that you heard us talk about next on Coast to Coast AM.